today on Building the Open Metaverse.
Recreating reality should be automatic, as automatic as possible. Intervening with reality is where we see creative opportunity is. So we want to make the first thing automatic and the second thing easy.
Welcome to Building the Open Metaverse, where technology experts discuss how the community is building the open metaverse together. Hosted by Patrick Cozy from Cesium and Mark Petit from Epic Games.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our show, Building the Open Metaverse, the podcast where technologies share their insights on how the community is building the metaverse together. Hello, my name is Mark Petit from Epic Games, and my co-host today, and as usual, is Patrick Cozy from Cesium. Hey, Patrick.
Hi, Mark. Hi, everybody.
Hey, guys. So today we'll talk about digital humans in the metaverse, and we have invited two of the industry luminaries to discuss the topic. So Patrick, expect some deep thinking around digital humans. So our first guest is Vladimir Masilovic. He's the CEO and co-founder of Trilateral, also my colleague at Epic Games, where he's our VP in charge of digital human technology. Vlad, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Mark. Very kind introduction and really good to be here.
Good to have you here. And we also have with us Dr. Mark Sayer, the CEO of Soul Machines. Mark was with us at the SIGGRAPH Birds of Phaser meeting where this podcast originated. So welcome back, Mark.
Yeah, nice to see you guys again.
You're the CEO of Soul Machine. You're also the director of the Laboratory for Animate Technologies at the Auckland Bioengineering Institute. So, you know, I read that your team is developing autonomously animated virtual humans with virtual brains and virtual nervous systems capable of highly expressive face-to-face interaction and real-time learning. So we're talking about characters that can show emotions and empathy. So, and I also read, Mark, that your goal is to humanize the interface between people and machines. I think these are a fascinating topic, but before we get there, please tell us about your path to the metaverse through computer graphics and the work that you did at Weta, particularly on King Kong and Avatar, and how it got you, you know, Academy Award recognition in the process.
So I guess my path started with a mixture of both science and art. And so I used to, study physics and things like that, but also would do portraits of people. And anyway, I ended up working on an eye surgery simulator where it was basically combining physical models and computer graphics. And so for my PhD, I started making that into a general anatomy simulator. And then one of the pieces of anatomy is the human face, a very complicated piece. And so I got really focused on that, and then that led into building digital actors. And then I was involved in some startup companies, one's called Life Effects, where we were actually, this is like, you know, late 1990s, early 2000s, where we were basically creating interactive digital models. You know, that's actually a long time ago. And we're also doing, trying to create realistic virtual humans. This is for film. So we did a few projects, one called The Jester and Young at Heart, which was about creating digital humans that it didn't make you think that they're an artificial character. You just went straight to, oh, what's that person's life history? What are they thinking? So I wanted to create digital humans that you would actually just think about their inner world and not worry about the artifice of that. Anyway, so all that kind of led into various things. I was in the visual effects industry for a long time, most of the time at Sony and at Weta. And that was creating digital characters, and I was looking at both the how to create realistic characters. So I did work with Paul Debevec for Spider-Man, where we were using the light stage to create Dr. Octopus and people like that. And then at Weta, I was and during that time I'd been working also on ways to motion capture, because at Life Effects and things like that, we were going, okay, we can capture actors because we built our own HD motion capture system and very high resolution. We're really looking at, and we're working on projects with people like Jim Carrey. We're trying to turn them into a fish for a particular project. But one of the big challenges there was the amount of data that you were capturing, and how do you actually make that into something that you know, isn't like a video playback, you know, like you have now with 3D video. It's like you've got tons of data, but you can't manipulate it. So it was really looking at how do we make this type of technology and this data manipulatable and animatable. And so I started developing methods for, I guess, transferring motion data onto characters which were different. And that was starting to really look into, okay, what's the essence of facial expression and interaction, and how do we, like, it's almost like transcribing music. You've captured it from one instrument and you've got a piano, now you need to turn it into a guitar, so you have to transcribe it, and very different instruments. And so this led to, you know, building sort of facts-based systems. And so this is particularly useful for characters like King Kong, where you have a performer with one facial geometry and a character like King Kong who's actually got very different facial geometry, like his eyebrows will roll up rather than go up. So there's all kinds of non-linearities in it. Anyway, all that led to sort of creating those sorts of, you know, models for those sorts of characters. And then we started making that into real-time systems for Avatar. So we had real-time systems where the actors on the stage of Avatar were basically driving characters. So James Cameron would be watching, you know, the Na'vi characters live, like he was actually in a video game, but he could have had a virtual camera. And so anyway, through all this work, I really got interested in, okay, we've got actors performing these roles. But then, you know, it's a three-year-plus process to get that to screen, and as one story, if you could have the computer characters create their own acting, act themselves, you've got infinite stories. It's completely, you know, infinite what can be done with them. And then I got, you know, I'd done work in bioengineering before, and I'd also been, you know, very interested in neuroscience and AI, all the different things that were going on, and in physiology. So I was really interested in the combination of all these things, is how do you actually create a digital character that can actually create its own expressions and act? But of course, that's a big rabbit hole. You basically end up having to make a digital brain. And so that sort of, after I sort of, you know, thought about this, I realized I can't go back. This is too exciting. So I sort of left the visual effects industry and started a lab, which then spun out into a company, Soul Machines. And, you know, along the course of that game, started making the very first autonomous, fully autonomous character, which was Baby X, which was a digital baby that you could sort of, you know, learn and interact with and do all these types of things as a sort of almost like a blank slate. So that's a very short version of the story about, and then of course now with Soul Machines and the metaverse coming around, it's like, how do you create autonomous digital characters for the metaverse? Because we're going to be interacting with all kinds of things, and not everything is going to be driven by a live human. You know, for example, if a business wants to scale, you don't want to have every single avatar on there necessarily driven by a human, because it's impossible to scale. Whereas that's where, you know, digital, like autonomous digital characters start allowing that to be a possibility. And then there's games and entertainment where if you actually have characters that can actually think for themselves and do different things, that's infinite. You know, like all the types of incredible crazy games and interactions we'll be able to make will be just, you know, so fascinating. And every time you play the game, you're going to have a different experience, you know. And so I think it, you know, that's all so exciting. So that's basically a compressed version.
Yeah, that just sounds just really, really amazing journey and really high tech work you've been doing. And, you know, as we bring 3D to everyone, I think, you know, operating at this scale and this realism is going to be super important. Then turning over to you, Vlad, I believe your journey involved a lot of AAA game work. So tell us about your journey through the metaverse.
Yeah, my background was originating from games. The journey started maybe about 20 years ago. Sounds a bit scary when I say it like that. it was sort of motivated, similar to Mark, as a sort of combination of art and technology. Like I could never really decide which one I liked better. And back in those days in Serbia, the formal education wasn't really understanding this sort of multidisciplinary approach, and sort of I went with my own path. And for a while, I felt lost a little bit, to be honest, because, you know, it's it was a quiet world back then in gaming if you wanted to do high-end characters. For a few years, I've been doing it on my own, and honestly, it felt more like a hobby than a job. But then, you know, I guess, you know, as a result of every true dedication, few people noticed initial results, and I became a technical director in a company called Image Metrics back in 2005, and had the honor to prototype two generations previous to this one of game consoles, PlayStation 3, the first back then next gen game for Rockstar Games, and I came up with this crazy character design, the rig for deformations and everything, and people were fascinated by the craziness of it, but told me that it's about 15 times over budget. But still, they were quite impressed, and I started kind of leading many of back in those days, Image Metrics was doing a lot of work with Rockstar Games, and I had the honor for like more than 10 years to kind of lead facial rigging systems for Rockstar Games through Image Metrics. And that path, I mean, back in those days, it really, people were telling me, Vlad, nobody cares about high fidelity characters. We care about gameplay, and you know, it's nice what you're doing, and we appreciate your enthusiasm, but, you know, just, you know, tame it down. So I had a little bit of time to think about scanning, and, you know, I sort of sensed in 2006-07 that a big change is coming, and that doing art manually is going to change. Not that it doesn't have a future, but it's not going to be about manually pushing vertices. And I invested a lot of my thinking into how can we acquire real-world data and how we can actually make it useful for real time. So around 2012, I founded Trilateral. And in the first days, we were very focused on the pipeline. How do we ingest large amounts of data? How we process it? How we make it useful? And it was actually quite fortunate for us. I would like to say I knew what would happen, but there was a bit of luck in there as well. And it just so happened that for PlayStation 4 generation of games, story-driven games were a big thing. Scanning was a big thing, and we were ready. Actually, much more than the rest of the industry. So that actually allowed Trilateral to grow very quickly. And it allowed us to start thinking about collecting big data sets. So that this is something that we intuitively wanted to do, because we were always attracted to ordered systems and efficiency and all of that. But the fruit of that labor was actually databases. And it was actually, it started being quite convenient to run initial tests on how would a parametric human look like, and how we could build models that would enable us to do a character rig much faster, and so on and so on. So that to collaboration with Epic Games started in 2015, where we sort of kicked it off really well. It was a lot of positive energy, and we were part of that campaign that announced Engine becoming free. And then for a few years after that, we were really pioneering a lot of real-time motion capture with Hellblade, and then later on with a Siren project that showcased real-time captured and solved digital human, and then leading to demos like Osiris Black that mapped it onto an alien character from Andy Serkis's performance. And then at that point in time, Epic Games and Trilateral had an in-depth conversation about the future, and we felt it was such a good time kind of doing it together, and a lot of kind of complementary skills being invested in all that, so that we decided to join forces and basically this time not only push the fidelity but also democratization of this capability. At the same time, our customers were thrilled with us, with quality and service, but also frustrated with us because we weren't available. We did our best, but the need grew so much that we became booked for many years in advance. And even though that's a success story, essentially, it was still a problematic one because we couldn't really address the needs of the industry. So that's how we formulated the plans for the MetaHuman product, which is in its essence about enabling others what we can do while we continue to push the boundaries of what we can do. And it feels much more fulfilling than showcasing a demo that only we can do. So just to give you a number that I'm very proud of, back in 2017, we did an analysis of the global market of rigs that were created that year. And we estimated that there would be about 50,000 digital humans created in all of the games, in all of the productions in the world. Only in the last year, there is about 1 million metahumans created, just metahumans. I can't imagine, you know, the rest of the productions. And that's sort of that exponential increase in productivity worldwide that I'm very excited about. So, you know, in the last year, it's been very kind of fulfilling. We could see many creators being able to tell stories that they otherwise wouldn't be able to. And I'm very excited to sort of push this to even greater capability, and you know, many more characters that would have to, that would be created in the future. And we are interested in reducing the skill level required to the level where you don't even have to think about technology. If you want to tell a story, we want to help everybody, you know, tell their stories through our products, and hopefully actually work together with other technologies, like Marx, for example, so that we can connect different capabilities and basically help everybody create this kind of new media, I suppose.
Great. So thank you, guys. The reason we wanted the two of you together was to try to educate ourselves because we're fascinated by the space. And, you know, we get a lot of questions from our audience as well, and kind of set some expectation and boundaries for digital human and the metaverse. So it's interesting to compare and contrast your approaches, your backgrounds. I mean, somebody from visual effects, somebody from games. And you seem to be, you know, tackling the problem from different perspectives. So maybe let's start with you, Vlad, about the MetaHuman technology. Your technology relies a lot on capturing massive amount of data and using machine learning. Can you walk us through the approach here?
Yeah. You know, partially I've already covered our fascination with collecting real-world data. It's really, there's no, I guess what we're trying to do is recreating reality should be automatic, as automatic as possible. Intervening with reality is where we see creative opportunity is. So we want to make the first thing automatic and the second thing easy. So our approach is, we sort of call it the kind of spiral of knowledge. We start with acquiring real world data. We then decompose this data into what we call atomic particles of that data. Then we build our virtual models. Then we build systems for synthesizing new data from which we basically train our systems on synthetic data as well as the real data. And then that enables us to capture and process new amounts of real data faster and to greater level of precision. So in every spin of this spiral, we are able to increase our capability order of magnitudes, either in fidelity or the amount of data that we capture. And I would say we're still at the beginnings. There's still many more to learn, to see. We're still very much focused on the appearance, but there is a lot to do on the behavior side of things, and the whole field is incredibly, incredibly complex. It feels like a lifetime search for something that cannot be obtained fully, you know, in infinite amount of time. So anyway, that's our approach. It's data driven with a sort of spiral of knowledge and then kind of building collections of tools around it to make it more efficient in the next round.
And Vlad, I love that you're trying to bring this to everyone. And, you know, we see with the metaverse that there's just going to be so many more consumers and so many more creators as well. And if I'm understanding correctly, it sounds like we're going to be able to build lots of different characters, whether it's something really realistic or something that's cartoon-like. And you're trying to make that as low cost and as easy as possible. Could you tell us more?
Absolutely. We are starting from reality because it may sound surprising, that's the easiest thing. The fantasy world is much more complicated. I guess for obvious reasons, there are so many realities that people can imagine. So as it's founded in reality, that's our connection point to when we do motion capture to the actor as well. If we understand reality, then we can understand how does that reality map onto virtual character. And then if we understand how does that virtual character map into different styles, then there is a pipeline. There is a sense of pipeline. It seems nice and elegant.
Great. So let's turn to Dr. Sagar. So Vlad's approach is collecting real-world data, then using machine learning. And you're also building a virtual brain and nervous systems that your characters can handle social interactions. Can you tell us about your tech?
Yeah, so there's probably a couple of components to our technology. So one is really the whole behavioral system, which I can cover in a bit. And then the other part is basically, creating the digital human bodies that people use. And so for that, our approach is more kind of creating ready-made type models. And so we will have a lot of our customers want, because we're creating, our sort of focus is really digital workforce. So these are for professional roles and things like that. And so our customers will want to appeal to particular demographics, so you have a digital human that kind of fits that particular role. And so to that point, we've also been, scanning lots of people to build up sort of databases of different sort of, anthropological data in a way, and then combining them. But the other part of our company is really focused on driving, autonomous driving of the characters, and so that sort of applies to any animated character. And actually, at the moment, we've got a project where we're going to be connecting up our brain to a metahuman, so that will be really fun. The thing is, there is what the real goal is: how do you bring life to technology? How do you effectively, it's the essence of animation. How do you bring a character alive? And so, it doesn't have to be a human character. It could be a talking strawberry or something like that. And I think in the metaverse, when we get into there, we're going to have sort of professional applications where you want to appear realistic. Like if I'm a digital doctor, you don't want me looking like a dinosaur, right? But if I'm in a social thing, then it's like a fancy dress party and you're going to want to have the most creative characters possible. And, the challenge, like Vlad's saying, is enormous there because, I mean, probably one of the most inspiring things that I saw in that was Spore, the game Spore, where they had the character creator. You could make a whole lot of different things. It was very fun, but I imagine that, and it was sort of anybody could do it, like a kid could do it. And I imagine that we'll need that sort of level tooling, as we get more into the metaverse to allow complete creative freedom. Now, the other thing that we do is we do digital celebrities. And this ends up being a much more, you're trying to get a model of a real person. So then all the accuracy matters. And sometimes it's real people that exist now, like we did a Will.i.am model, for example, but we're also doing some celebrities that we're de-aging them. So we're working on some projects at the moment. We're putting people back in their heyday, and that requires a lot of there's artwork involved in that, and so that's a it's a lot of work. So we're looking at ways that we can automate a lot of these processes as we go on. On the behavioral side, there's a sliding scale of a fully autonomous character that's like Baby X. It just does its own stuff. And then you've got more of a controllable one. That might be a digital doctor or financier or something like that, where the company wants full control over their model. They don't want it doing something random. So those are more sort of like if you're doing a brand ambassador, for example, you're creating a curated experience. And so what we have in the model is it's almost like you can set the degree of autonomy that you actually want to have in the character. And so in terms of the technology, so we've got the BabyX side where we're really trying to model basically the essence of behavior, so building cognitive models, you know, core emotional models, all these things coming together. And then we have something where, say, it's more, you know, corporate or customer focused thing, then it's like, okay, we can take existing technologies and allow them to plug in those things. So we're doing, you know, for example, if we can plug in OpenAI or something like that into there, then we can have NLG driving the characters. But a lot of the customers will actually want to have much more just standard sort of NLP type stuff where it's a curated experience, because they don't want it to go off on some unexpected direction. So we try to cater across those areas. And the thing that excites me the most, of course, is the fully autonomous work. And so that's, and now for that, but what they do share, all the models, is they kind of share the same technology, but they use different elements of it. So for example, we have, you know, models, so the emotional system, which is autonomous, is constrained by how you might interact with it. If it's for a very professional application, then you don't want your doctor suddenly starting to cry, right? So that's the thing, is that then it's like, or a concierge, you know, getting upset at somebody. But the key thing that we're really aiming for is empathy. We're trying to get a degree of empathetic connection. So that means that I have to acknowledge your emotion, you know, in an interaction, because you want to be heard. And so I guess what we're trying to do in the interaction with digital humans is create models that kind of acknowledge the whole person, if you like. So when you interact with a character, you want information, you want them to help you, but you also want to be felt, I guess. You know, it's like that you want your emotions to be accounted for and then to be responded to in an appropriate way. And then, of course, you know, one of our big goals with the autonomous technology is really to create AI that you can collaborate with. And so the BabyX project, one of the key elements we're looking at there is the essence of cooperation. How do humans cooperate in different tasks? Because a lot of that is where, especially like face-to-face interactions, are the most effective interactions that people have. And so, you know, this is why we're using video calls instead of, you know, this isn't a text message or a phone call type thing. It's actually much more effective because we can just get so much more information. So all of these factors are basically information. They're all valuable. They amplify, they control your attention, you know, what matters. So there's a lot of things there. Like we use a lot, we try to take advantage of the, I guess, the whole visual medium, because if I have a face-to-face conversation with technology, I can show you things, I can, you know, express lots of things happen. And it's the opposite of like 2001, where you had HAL, where, you know, you've basically got a red light which is just watching, it's lip-reading people, but they don't even know about it. We've kind of got that sort of same technology with a lot of the home, you know, the home, you know, like the speakers, like the echoes and so forth, because they're sitting in your room listening to you, but you don't really know, and it's a one-way interaction. Whereas the face-to-face interaction, it's much more in the open, it's honest. Like if you had a digital human there, you know, watching you, and you can tell it's listening, you might go into another room or you might turn it off. And it's those types of things where, you know, we can see sort of, it's just respect for privacy, I think, which will matter more and more. Because ultimately, for us to use these technologies, we have to trust them. That's the only way it's ever going to be accepted by society.
So that's interesting. So Vlad, you mentioned the millions of metahumans, so or at least 1 million, or more than 1 million. So how far are we from making, you know, these photorealistic characters available to all creators? And then I have the same question for Mark about autonomy. You know, can you kind of get us a sense of how far we are from this being, you know, widely available?
I guess it depends on the definition of widely available. Do you mean in the hands of...
Yeah, I mean, we're heading towards a creator economy, and I'm sure people in the metaverse will want, you know, a lot of people will want to create their own, you know, either fantasy or realistic representation.
I would say that we're probably in 3 to 5 years we're gonna start seeing some real world usage of digital humans that are being used by wider population to tell a story. I sometimes imagine metaverse like interactive YouTube, right? There is today. I remember a show from 96. I was so disappointed to hear from an expert on television. They said computers will never be able to play video because that's just too much information for computers. And I was really in a bad mood for days after hearing that, because I loved the idea of dealing with video on computers, and fortunately that was so wrong. And then I also remember the time when posting a video to internet was something like science fiction. I try to imagine the metaverse as it's going to be, and I sort of see it as interactive YouTube, not literally to be, a place where people can create interactive content and invite others to participate in that. And, you know, I guess it's impossible to imagine all use cases what that will imply, but I would imagine that people will be, you know, building virtual worlds easily, parametrically or by description. And then, holodeck in Star Trek is a good analogy. Again, through description of some kind, creating people as well. And then defining some high-level actions that these people will be doing. For example, not so high-level, like not like, you know, go angrily into the street, but more like from here to there, walk and open the door, and then say this or react to this person. So I guess it's a little bit down to earth, I realize, but we're talking about the timeline of 3 to 5 years. But I truly believe in Mark's approach, where at some point, these are able to simulate intelligence. And I think simulate intelligence is the key thing. I don't think that they will ever be intelligent, but maybe in some more distant future. But I do believe that it's going to be quite interesting to see these virtual simulated spaces where even the characters will be simulated and they will have their own personality. And I'm sure that Mark will pleasantly surprise us with how awesome that's going to be. But I would say that's, maybe I'm wrong, but that's probably 5+ years, that kind of future. But I think this simpler future in 3 to 5 years is still going to be very engaging and very fun. And if we enable some sort of agency from the user to participate in that space together with these NPCs and their friends, I see that as an opportunity for a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I can attest to that quickly, Vlad. You know, the minute we put the metahumans in the hands of our Unreal Fellowship participants, the variety of stories, the quality of the stories shot up to the moon. You know, these people in 5 weeks were able to create multi-character stories, very emotional, in virtually no time. So I think you're right. Maybe a little bit too modest, I think. You know, we've already, thanks to the metahuman creator, gone a long way there. So Mark, what's the roadmap to some level of autonomy? What do you think is ahead of us?
So before I say that, I just want to say how cool those videos are that have been made with the metahumans. They look awesome. That's fantastic. So one of them even had Mike Seymour pop up in it as well, which was quite funny. So it's really cool to actually see people creating these quality experiences with the digital humans. And so, you know, what I'm really excited about is make that interactive. You know, if you get that quality and it's interactive, that is super exciting. So but you can see all the stepping stones to make that happen. So I don't think we're too far off. So touching on some of the things that this is like, we currently actually have a lot of our digital humans already out there working, like in different things. Now they may be in, at the moment it's more web based, but because the technology is all 3D, you know, you can run it in an engine in a virtual space or augmented reality space. So we've been doing various projects around that. And so, and I guess with Vlad's example of, you know, walk angrily to the whatever, that's the sort of thing which we're really looking at, in that it's a, it becomes a virtual character that you direct. You know, that's one of the, so, but there's different use cases, because you'll have something where you want to create a story, and like looking at it, there's, you know, the layers of control that you want in a digital character, I think, reflect what happens in, like, say, you're a director. I want to tell a story, and I'm just giving high-level commands to actors, but the actors are then interpreting them and you know, doing their own thing. But then the director will say, oh, can you do that again, but more happy, or something like that. And then if a director's working with an animator, you've then got the animators putting different expression and control in there. So I think that, you know, the multi-level approach is the right one to go with this, where you've got very high-level commands for the non-animator, non-technical, I just want my digital human to go and do that, versus, okay, I actually want to create a very refined experience, and I'm going to direct each part of it, like I'm creating an animation. And so I think that there's room for all of that, and especially when we start looking at personality models. So, you know, the way in which something behaves actually, you know, really conveys so much personality. So when we first did motion capture of Jim Carrey, this is like, you know, over 20, probably about 24, 25 years ago or something like that. We took his motion capture data and we put it onto like we had Peter Jackson coming to visit at the time, so we put it on a Weta cave troll because they'd sent over a model, and it came out exactly, the personality just came completely through on the cave troll. It was like a totally different appearance, but the essence of the person was really coming through. And so that whole area is really exciting, is the fidelity of the animation. Now, you need to have control over the different aspects of the animation depending on your task. So when we talk about autonomy, there's many, many layers to that. So you can have full autonomous character, in my mind, has its own mind and values. And, you know, that's depending on where you draw the line, that can, you know, be a long way off. Like Vlad's saying, with like truly intelligent characters, you know, that could be a really the AGI type technology, you know, that can be 50 years away. We will get a lot of technologies which do some very impressive things, I think, sooner than that. And it's also the way that you're relating to information. So if you think about internet, we've got all this information out there, especially the metaverse. Everything is going to be connected. I see the digital humans as the nexus. They connect all of that, because how do you make everything going on the internet meaningful? Normally, we're used to somebody telling us about something or showing us things. We need a way to simplify information, and you know that's why we talk to other people. You know, what's going on? You know, and you know, show me this. So if you watch, and Vlad's example of the interactive YouTube channel, YouTube, I think one of the most incredible things about YouTube is the educational thing. If you want to fix something, you just go into YouTube and it tells you how to play a guitar or fix a sync or anything like that.
You know, not enough people talk about that. You know, everybody who's got YouTube has free education now, and nobody's excited about it. I mean, not literally nobody, but not enough people. I'm really glad that you mentioned it.
I think it's massive. So, we with the digital humans, you know, it's about interactively showing you that. So if you're training now, you know, you're training or learning something, you now have an assistant that can, you've basically created that interactive YouTube video. And so a lot of our focus, a lot of the technology we've been developing is to create exactly that sort of thing at the moment. So it is so that you can have this backwards and forth, that's this feedback, because, you know, like when you're learning something, you know, you might get stuck on something, or you might want to go back to something, and all these types of things, I think, are really important. And because everybody learns at different paces, and you also want to get the user involved. You know, like we did a language tutor model where you know, you're actually getting the person to speak to a digital person, because that's the closest that they'll get to speaking to a real person when they go out on the street. And so they have to basically you know, put themselves out there a little bit. We have, you know, we're doing, we've got projects going on in healthcare. So we're doing, you know, like digital, like therapy assistants and things like that, where people will actually disclose more to a digital human than they will to a real person because they don't feel judged. There's all kinds of really interesting, you know, potential here.
Yeah, I agree. Really, really exciting opportunities. So Vlad, Dr. Sagar, I want to change gears a little bit. And Dr. Sagar, you may remember from the Sigref Boff we did last summer that really kicked off the podcast. You know, there was a theme across that entire event around open standards and interoperability in the metaverse. How do we build an ecosystem where many different participants can contribute? How do we have lots of different pieces of software that all become best at what they do? And then we have everything kind of work together. And this is a topic really dear to Mark and I. I've done a lot of work in open standards myself. And when we look at kind of where we are and then where we need to be for the complexities of digital humans, you know, I'd love to hear both of your perspectives. Vlad, maybe do you want to start? Or Dr. Sagar, please start.
I can. So I think, yeah, I think this is super. Actually, Vlad, do you want to go first?
No, no, it's fine. We're probably going to say similar things.
One of the things is that we're really looking at, like, how do we basically create the connect the autonomous animation system to any other model? And so, as I mentioned earlier, so we're you know, currently connecting one up to a MetaHuman. So that's and sort of looking at what does it take to basically connect it to a MetaHuman model. We're also looking at, like, you know, completely non-human characters. What happens if it's got a completely different skeleton and, you know, face and different types of things like that? So, and also, of course, then there's on the, you know, you've got all the different platforms that you might be working on. So so there's the animation connection, which I think is actually pretty easy, really, because it's a mapping problem. So I think you can do that for different people's rigs and things like that. Then there's to make it really democratized for anybody to use, you know, so we reverse back from, okay, I've got some technical skill to, hey, I just want to have a digital human in my application and I just want to drop it in and make it do this stuff. That's something where, you know, these high level sort of controls over what you're starting to think about, you know, behaviors, you know, information sources, and this is where it can get, you know, quite complex. And this is sort of at the heart of the problem that we're trying to solve, is you're combining complex information from different sources and you're having to create an interactive experience out of that. And so there's, you know, there's layers and layers to that. Yeah. So, but I, you know, to that end, we, you know, really looking at a sort of animation API type thing that can be plugged into lots of different models or backwards and forwards. Because then, and I think that for that, this open standards is really key. So it's something I'm very keen to be involved in. And you know, because, and I think, you know, this is another thing to do with MetaHuman, is that, you know, with MetaHuman, you get all these amazing hairstyles, you get clothing, you get all this, you know, these are other things. Like, how do you, you know, because you need to communicate that as well. So you're actually, you know, there's so much choice that's possible. You know, so this is a really cool thing, is like, how do you make those a sort of standard? Like, you know, is it a fashion standard? Is it I need to wear exactly this shirt? What happens if I've got a really, like, and we start getting into, you know, like, if people purchase something on the internet, so I've got an NFT thing and I've bought some fancy shirt, and now I want to put that shirt on a MetaHuman, how do I transfer that data and have it work? Because I've paid for it, I own this, you know, but I now need it to work on a MetaHuman. So it's like a, you know, I think we're going to have those types of things where we might have, you know, universal rigs and you know, with the whole facial animation systems and things like that, you kind of, at a core level, you know, like with MetaHuman, you're kind of, you know, moving the different sort of facial regions and muscles around, and, you know, we do the same sort of thing, and it's like those are, you know, that's your musical notes. So as long as the animation systems are controlling that, you know, things like ARKit, for example, I mean, people have a sort of a basis of facial animation, which is, you know, it's kind of close to facts type thing, but which makes sense because it's, you know, these are the muscles that you can drive. Getting into body animation, things like that, we've got, there's two approaches to that. You know, there's a data-driven approach where, say, I've got a walk cycle or I've got particular motions that I'm trying to blend versus I'm creating the motion. So this is a more physics-driven or intent-driven model. And that's where, okay, I'm moving my arm to pick up a thing, and I'm actually controlling the body. So, you know, one of the things we've been exploring is muscle-driven animation. So it's kind of animated from the inside out. But, you know, you've got both, and it's all very, you know, they have different degrees of complexity and you know, speed to get things going.
So Vlad, you extract your parametric representation from a lot of scan data. You think there is... that could be something that could become more generic as some sort of synthetic representation of a digital human?
So when we were starting, we didn't know what we will end up with, right? And how do you standardize something that you don't know? And I think this is the same problem now. So it was actually, our decision was smaller and simpler. We wanted to standardize a human face, and we were thinking, well, what will not change about human face? And that is anatomy. So we created this abstraction layer, which we are calling Rig Logic. And we said Rig Logic is somewhat representative of anatomy, and what lies underneath is going to change, but this thing will not, this interface. So that's how we split the problem. So we've sort of evolved underlying complexity of Rig Logic while kind of keeping this the same. And that, you know, in time became the standard interface for MetaHumans 2. Now, you know, we are quite proud of what we achieved with MetaHumans, but we are not happy yet. Like, they're not photoreal. So this Rig Logic will continue to evolve into various kind of machine learning matrices and, you know, models and combinations of different things, but we will try to keep this interface the same. And I think this is the sort of one of the steps towards that standardization. Physics is certainly another one, because physics, again, will not change, the rules of physics. And as we extend to the body, I would expect that won't change anytime soon either. So I think this is a good way, kind of a good philosophy to go. I love the idea about the clothing and kind of owning your asset throughout the spaces. Definitely we are thinking that direction. That's still a little bit further out, but I definitely support that. I think the big challenge will be, although I do think this is going in the right direction, building an open metaverse will require certain openness from the companies that are involved in building it. And at the same time, it's a competitive space as well, so that's going to be a challenge. But I am optimistic more than I would be in other industries because of the mentality of people that are in this industry, I suppose. And again, understanding that metaverse is exciting only if it's connected. If it's not, then it's kind of a boring place.
So you think that the work that you've done on faces, you can extend to the entire human body and create those kind of standardized interface to interact with?
I believe so, yeah. I think, you know, muscle-inspired locomotion, physics-inspired locomotion that takes certain inputs from the real world is definitely the way to go. And I hope that people like Mark will then work on certain logic, how we excite these muscles and why, so that we can kind of bring that sort of autonomy to these virtual beings.
So Mark, in this idea of exchanging brains or combining brains, do you see ways to express that those learnings and those, you know?
Yeah, we're thinking about that a lot at the moment. We have a whole sort of you know, technology initiative which we're calling Ubiquity, which is really you know, allowing, you know, how do we connect to you know, other people's models, and so. You know, because it is a thing where I totally agree with Vlad with, you know, the metaverse is going to be so big that people are going to want all kinds of models. You know, some people want to look like a Minecraft character, and other people will want to look like a photorealistic Tyrannosaurus Rex, and other people will want to look like a celebrity. And it's like, so these are all very, very different, you know, different controls. But I think the one common factor that people are going to want is expressivity. And so the ability to really express emotion, to communicate, to get really good lip sync, all these types of things are going to be, you know, that's the common factor across the thing. But saying that, actually, you could probably still have some South Park sort of characters as well if you wanted to. But it's like people will have all of these. And so I think it's a land of plenty in a way, because I think that there's going to be, everybody's going to want to have different things for different cases. I mean, in the original Snow Crash book, you know, that was really interesting, because it was like, okay, certain people could afford a high quality avatar, others would have more pixelated ones, others could do, you know, all kinds of different things. And so, and then you've got the whole programmable components of what they can do too. So these are exciting. There's also, we've also got the problem to really look at in terms of standards of interaction with elements in the virtual worlds. So if I'm picking up a virtual object, you know, we have to make sure that the digital human's body, the hands don't go through the object. You know, there's got to be collision detection. There's got to be those types of things. And you know, even collision detection, like if a lot of, you know, people do things, they touch their face or they go, Now, for digital human expressing, that's actually a hard problem because you know, unless you're doing full-on collision detection of absolutely everything, and then that's changing the way the face is. Like if I do this, you know, and or hold my mouth, my expressions are different. That's actually a pretty hard problem to solve, and so we will get to those points where we need to, you know, as the fidelity goes up and up, and I think we get much, much faster. You know, there'll be, whether it's a physics-based approach or a machine learning approach, because you can do this stuff with lots of data too, but it's like a, those, you know, we'll just keep adding to the, you know, awesomeness of what's able to be achieved there.
Well, as expected, Patrick, this is a very deep and endless topic, but I think we should wrap up for the sake of keeping this in an acceptable length. So, one question we like to ask, because, you know, especially as the plans are for the further episode down the line, is for each of you, is there any topics that we haven't discussed today we should have really evoked? So maybe Vlad?
Well, you know, there's many things that we didn't mention. Like you say, like, it's difficult to kind of pack it in about 1 hour. I'm deeply interested in the process of forming an identity and how we reach decisions. I think that's a very deep rabbit hole that you know, Mark is obviously jumping into. But identity, I think, in the metaverse, this is all about that, right? It's about expressing yourself through that. I think it has a very deep implications to in parts of the industry that are not necessarily considered metaverse. Like we briefly mentioned garments and clothing, like even though that's not computer graphics, it is the way in which we express our identity. And I think there's going to be many other industries which will be drawn in the metaverse, regardless of whether they wanted it or not, eventually. So I guess we did mention it for a bit, but you know, I guess it deserves one more mention.
One of the things I'm interested in is, you know, we've got there's what I'd call the continuous metaverse, and then like a bubble metaverse possible. So if, for example, if you could have potentially an experience where you're interacting with the character, and at one moment you're running it in Unreal Engine and you're in a full 3D environment, and then you may pop out of that and you may go into, let's just say for the sake of it, Minecraft or something like that, and you're in a very different engine which has got its own rules or so forth. And then you may even be on a cell phone, you know, augmented reality experience. And do we have, like, for these things, do we have multiple instances of a character, So you have your Unreal version, you have your, you know, Minecraft version, which looks, it's a different geometry, you know, because it's simplified. And then you've got your one which is optimized for AR, for example, or whatever it is, a web page. And do we, like, in terms of metaverse question, is that do we want to have the same engine driving all of those, or are they engines built for the particular world that's created? Like, you know, I see this with you know, some of the various Web3 projects, is that if I go into, like, say, a Decentraland or Sandbox type model, then the character that you put in there, you have to, or Roblox or something, you've got the rules that it has to operate by. Now, you may want to do more than they're going to allow you to. So the owner of that particular metaverse might allow you to do anything. So then, for example, or do you go into, like, Unreal and you basically do your entire, you know, game controller and create your own sort of experience that you can do in any different way? So we're going to have those types of things where if we swap a character across, there's also what's the abilities of the character in these environments. And then we get into things like communication between characters. If I'm talking to another character in Unreal, right, and I'm having conversation, how does that work versus if I was in Roblox and I've got little speech bubbles or something like that? You know, so so we've got not only the creation of the models, but we've also got to think about how do they communicate? How do we interact with an object? And, you know, I want to do a Minecraft thing versus something in high fidelity Unreal model. So these things are really going to matter, because this is part of the, how do I transfer my character? Or do I have multiple identities? Do I exist as one model in Unreal and another model in Roblox? You know, so, you know, am I the same or different?
In a previous episode, we talked to Kim Davidson, the CEO of SideFX, about proceduralism. And, you know, even for Well, he has this postulate that we could actually have a parametric representation of the world and kind of generate it at runtime, you know, slightly different in different environment. And I guess with the parametric representation of a human, if you can carry the essence of his personality and its knowledge, you could regrow that human in a different manner in the Lego world than you would do in a photorealistic world. So do you think we could get there?
Yeah, I think that's a really cool approach. That's a really neat way to think about the problem.
Do you ever think about what kind of hardware in the world will be required to run all of this virtual worlds?
Yeah, we did have a conversation with Bill Vass, VP of engineering from AWS, and we're far from it, from having the kind of compute that we'll need, but we're probably going to get there at some point. So
we just have to basically, you know, this is one of the things, is like, you know, if you're mining Bitcoin, then that's kind of wasted energy. So maybe all the Bitcoin mining could go towards powering virtual characters in the metaverse and do something more useful.
Maybe still with the same outcome, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that actually results in a value. You know, it's a more globally thoughtful use of compute power.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt that the more compute power that becomes available, the more interesting things we're going to immediately want to do with it for the metaverse. So to wrap things up, we always like to end the episode with a shout out. If there is an individual or an organization, you know, that you'd like to give a shout out to, Dr. Sagar, would you like to start?
Well, I'd like to shout out to everybody at my company Soul Machines, and you know, they're doing an incredible job on all kinds of different areas, and then also like to shout out to pretty much everybody that's worked on virtual humans, because you guys really know what a challenge this is and how difficult it is, because it's like, you know, when you get down to the details of an eye or an eyelid or just how the lips are moving, all those types of things, is like it's such a complex art form in a way that it's like you guys know the pain, so producing absolutely, you know, beautiful results, and they just keep getting better and better each year.
That's a tough one to follow. I will have to say, I really sort of I didn't think of it that way, Mark, but I really support it. I guess in order to do this, what we do, especially back in the day when it wasn't so exciting, you would have to be a believer beyond reason a little bit. So yeah, definitely I will join that. And I will also shout out to our whole team, who often doesn't get the spotlight, often because they don't want to, because they're a bunch of, you know, freaks in the best possible way, focused to their kind of part of the whole story. But yeah, there's hundreds of them. And yeah, that's what I'll do. Hey, guys and girls and everybody else.
Dr. Sagar, Vlad, thank you so much for those insights. You know, this is one of the most important topics in the metaverse. I think, you know, this human representation, human interaction, empathy. You know, thank you so much for your insight. We know it's the beginning of a long road. I want to also thank our audience. You know, we get getting good feedback on the podcast. Thank you, everybody. Keep on telling us what you want to hear about. Keep on supporting us. It's motivates to keep us going. Right, Patrick?
Absolutely.
All right. With this, again, thank you, everybody. Dr. Sagar, Vladimir Masilovic, thank you so much for being there with us. Have a good day, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks for listening.